Good evening, everyone. My name is Derek Moffat, and I am a grateful recovered alcoholic tonight. One little thing about the Wilson House. I just called last weekend to make my reservations, and it was originally booked for 60 people. However, because of the amount of people interested, they extended the workshop to 90 people. So there is still a bunch of spaces available for you to jump on that experience. And I hope to see some of you up there. So, in a general way, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I got to first and foremost thank Chris for allowing me to come down here and be of service. And I want to thank all of you for being here and allowing me to be of service as well. It's truly an honor and a humbling experience to be able to do things like this, to share my passion in a room full of people who understand the passion. So with that, I was born an alcoholic. I don't believe I became an alcoholic when I put a drink in my body. I was definitely born an alcoholic. I portrayed alcoholic behavior as a young kid up until adolescence. And, you know, I had outside things were just perfect. You know, my household and my childhood couldn't be any better. I had a loving father, a loving stepfather, loving mother, sober mother and sober stepfather. I had the house, the toys, all the outside stuff. But always as a kid, nothing felt right. Nothing ever seemed okay inside Derek Moffat. It was always something that could be better than. I always saw it through outside situations or belief systems, or I always saw it through circumstances. I was always seeking something to make me feel different. And in sixth grade, let me back up a little bit. I've never had any friends my whole life. Was a very loner. I was always the petite, small kid in class who got made fun of and got put in lockers and things like that. And, you know, I'm okay with that today. It's my past, and that's exactly what it is. And, you know, in sixth grade, one of the cool kids who was, you know, friends with everyone was smoking some pot, and I jumped in the circle and for the first time kind of felt a part of. It was an immediate gratification of kind of how I felt. And I didn't touch anything else really until about eighth grade. And it was my sister's high school graduation party, and they were passing around a bottle of Jack Daniels. I was on the trampoline, her and all her friends, and I'm in eighth grade, and I run out to the trampoline to be a part of, you know, and I reach in, as that bottle's coming around, I reach in and I grab it, and I've never drank up until that point, and I took a couple deep swigs off that bottle of Jack Daniels, it hit my body and exploded. And for the first time in my life, I felt a part of. For the first time in my life, I felt right. Alcohol had fixed that internal malady in my body. It fixed that spiritual malady. It completely got right with that physical craving. And, the phenomenon kicked in. And from eighth grade on, I chased that same feeling right up until my senior year of high school. And I'd sit here and lie straight to your face if I didn't say that I had a blast while I was out there. I had a ton of fun. I was between the ages of really 14 and 18, having a blast, not a care in the world. I was an all-scholastic soccer player. I raced snowmobiles. I was sponsored by Yamaha. Like, when alcohol and drugs worked in my life, when alcohol worked in my life, I was untouchable. Everything was great. It's ironic that the one thing that made me feel free landed me almost dead in hospitals, ripped my life apart, and made me absolutely nothing. Took away every moral fiber in my body. But I remember my 16th birthday, and this is what I consider fun, you know. My 16th birthday, I had got completely blitzed my sister had invited some of her friends over, and just kind of chasing that freedom. And do you know what those little runt bikes are? They're like these little blue bikes. The wheels are about this big, and the frame's about this big. And I'm about the same size I am today. And so I'm pedaling away on this little bike, and I try and jump this concrete barrier that the gas station pumps are on. And I missed and went sliding across the pavement on my face, and proceeded to drink through the night and had a bloody face, and I passed out. And when I woke up in the morning, the pillow was stuck to my face, scabbed over. So I had to jump in the shower and peel this pillow off my face, and off came my face with this pillow. Well, the next day I was so hungover, I was like, I'll never drink like that again. I'll never drink like that again. And the next weekend I was doing the same exact thing. You know, like that insanity had already kicked in. That at page 24 talks about it, is that I will not remember and I cannot bring into the consciousness with sufficient force the memory of suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. You know, I was without defense against that first drink. No human power would relieve my alcoholism. And so the next weekend I'm doing the exact same thing over and over again. And, it was only a matter of time before that weekend started on Thursday. And then ended on Monday. And then started on Wednesday. And ended on Tuesday. You know, and like, it just became a routine thing by the time I was 18 years old. And I always seemed to go out on benders on my birthday. But on my 18th birthday, I got into all sorts of outside issues. But this is Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'm going to keep it on alcohol. I got into all sorts of outside issues. And the only reason I got into those is because they allowed me to drink more. I was 16 years old, and my sister's friend offered me some Go Fast, and I said no at first because that was too bad, and I'm just drinking, and thanks very much, I'm happy with my Bud Light, and you can have your stuff. And I started dozing out and passing out, and took some of that and was off to the races again. It picked me up, brought me right back to like the beginning of the night, and I was off, and I was able to start all over again. That's the only reason I did those outside issues, was so I could drink more. And my 18th birthday, this is just kind of progressing to where it's going, is I throw a huge bender at my house. I invite about 50 people. Those people invite about 20 people. Both sisters are home from college at this point. So they're like, well, screw it. If you're inviting that many people over, I'm going to. So they call their friends in. By the end of the night, it's midnight, and I got about 300 people at my house. And we had a good time. We really had a good time. And I was never a good-looking kid, I'll tell you that. I was just not good-looking. I was always awkward and, whatever. And I'm about 18 years at my 18th birthday party, and I'm sitting on my porch, and from where the railing, my porch is 8 feet off the ground, and where the railing connected to the house and to the first post had been rotted out. But we always had a table there to make sure that no one kind of leaned against the table or whatever. But in our bright minds, we pulled the table out to play some Beirut. And I was just, again, once blitzed. And I was hitting on one of my sister's best friends. And I went to go be Joe Cool and lean up against the railing. And off the porch I went. And, landed on my back, wind knocked out of me. I can't talk, I can't speak anything. And she looks over and tosses me a beer and says, you'll be all right, kid. And that's just kind of the way we did it. That's just what happened. That's the way I drank. I drank for effect. I didn't drink for taste. That's just what happened. One more incident, and I'll get into it, is this... All these stories characterize exactly how I drank. There was never social drinking. I've never had a legal drink. I've never had a legal drink. Every single time I drank for effect. I drank to overcome a spiritual malady. To overcome something beyond my mental control, beyond my physical need, and I had to fix what was inside of me. So, it's my sister's graduation from college, and I'm going to pull it together for the weekend. I'm going to be there for the family. I'm going to do what a brother's supposed to do, and I'm going to watch and clap and be a good brother. I'm going to be a good son for one weekend. Just one weekend. That's all I need. And we started at the reception and someone offered me a Long Island iced tea and no. And I drank it. And I had three more and then I had a couple Cape Codders and we went back to her. She was living in a townhouse and I was off and running again. And I had sworn to the inner core of my being, I wasn't going to drink. I wasn't going to do it. I was going to be a good brother. I was going to be a good son. And I was going to be able to be there for my family. Well, alcohol won. And I proceeded to get the drunkest I've ever been in my entire life. I've never been so sick the next day. I don't remember. I was in a complete blackout. They told me I army crawled from her townhouse to the townhouse next door and started going shot for shot with one of the other seniors. And I don't remember any of it. I remember I army crawled back and passed out in one of these wicker, whatever you call it there. It looks like a big, just saucer-type futon. And, what poor college kids have in their dorms. And I woke up and I was soaked from my hair through to my toes, soaked. And I'm like, someone spilt beer on me. No, I had pissed myself. And I was covered from head to toe in piss. And it was disgusting. I took a shower and I showed up to my sister's graduation absolutely obliterated. Absolutely obliterated from the night before. Couldn't comprehend anything. Just intoxicated. But I had sworn I was never going to do it. I did not set out that way. We had an Astro van. And on the way home, I had whipped that door open. I'm driving down. My mother's driving down Route 89, coming home from Vermont. And that side door was opening every 15 minutes. And I was puking my guts out on the highway. And my mother dropped me off at Mass General Hospital and then went back home. And she said, you guys take care of them. And they pumped me full of charcoal and I had the worst alcohol poisoning ever. And that sickness, I thought, was the end. That gut-wrenching pain of detoxing from that alcohol was just gross. And you all know what I'm talking about. That gut-wrenching pain emotionally of I did it again. I didn't want to do it again. And I'm sick as a dog to boot. So coming out of Mass General Hospital, now we're coming towards the end now. And I decided that it'd be a wise idea to go to Rio de Janeiro for 6 weeks my senior year of high school. For carnival to boot. And, the cool thing about this is there's El Cristo, and it's this big statue of Christ, like overlooking everyone, blessing the entire city of Rio de Janeiro. And everyone's naked, shit-faced. And it's the weirdest experience ever. You want to be kind of spiritual, but you just can't help it. And I proceeded to hit my bottom in Brazil. And in Boston, if you went out to a club or whatever and you started spilling out onto the street, the cops would come by and push you along and say, hey, look, you got to get off the street, go to the next bar, or go whatever. But in Brazil, what the cops do is they come by and they block the end of the streets off and it comes this huge block party. So everyone, it's just like, okay, get as drunk as you can. Let's go. And it was heaven. It was exactly where I needed to be at that time. And God works in my life. God works in my life. And I made it home. I actually ended up smuggling drugs home. And okay, I tell this story. My mother's a tall blonde who is absolutely gorgeous. And I figured that would come through customs and she'd flip her hair and would be fine and would go straight through and nothing would happen. And that's exactly what happened. The guy's sitting there. I got a stash and coffee and I'm shaking and sweating. I am scared to death because I know what's happening. I'm going to jail for 20 years if I get caught. And my mother does exactly that and whatever. And we go through customs and I tried to party the same exact way as I was in Brazil and it didn't work at all. 8:30 in the morning, in school, completely drunk. Homeroom teacher didn't approve of it. And they walked into my computer class. I had a bottle like this, Poland Spring bottle, full of 200 proof cachaça. And it's full sugar cane alcohol. And just drinking it straight. Because trying to overcome that physical craving, that mental obsession, and by now that spiritual malady is kicking my ass. And no matter how much I put in, I can't get over it. It's not enough. And at 8:30 in the morning, my principal walks into my room, my computer class, and I can't walk. And he says, "Derek, I'm going to help you in." And he helps me down, and I get to the top of the stairs, and I do the whole weebles wobble, but they don't fall down, and I fell down and went face first down the stairs. And that was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. So, March 28th, 2003, I got caught in school and I couldn't get into treatment. Oh, so the officer that of the school, I had snowmobiled with for years. And he says to me, he goes, "Derek, look, I can search your truck and put you away for 20 year, or 15 years, or you can get help." And I'm like 5'7", 95 pounds, and I'm like, 15 years, let me think, I'll be 38, and he's like, "Go to treatment." Okay. So I couldn't get in until Monday, and it was a Saturday night. It was March 28th, 2003, and I just couldn't last till Monday. I couldn't do it, and it was midnight, and I lived on a main trucking route, and I knew the answer, and it was the most coward thing I've ever done in my entire life. And if you've attempted suicide, I'm telling you it's the most coward thing in your entire life as well, is to take your own life and expect someone else to clean the mess. It's the most coward thing I have ever, ever done. I don't say it with pride. Trust me. And I threw myself in front of a Mack truck hauling ass down 58. And the driver swerved. He missed me by inches. And just threw my hands up in the air because it was over. I couldn't live like this anymore. The pain inside was too much. I had ripped through my family. My mother was kicking me out. At this time, my family wanted nothing to do with me. I completely humiliated all of them. And it was just ugly. It was ugly. I had no quality of life left. And, the driver got out of his truck and with a square fist came up to me and decked me square in the face. And everyone laughs. I didn't find it so humorous. Trust me. So broken nose, blood pouring from my face. And he points his finger and he goes, "Kid, if I had hit you, you would have ruined my life." That'll sober someone up real quick. And for the first time in a conscious thought, for the first time in my life, I realized that my alcoholism and my selfishness and self-centeredness was affecting every single person that came into contact with Derek Moffitt. And I went to treatment. High dollar facility, where a lot of celebrity goes. I went to McLean Hospital in Belmont. And I walked into the East House. Well, actually, they strapped me down. It was an 8-point restraint on a stretcher from Mass General. I didn't walk. I was rolled. And they took me to... My mother's such a smart woman. God bless her soul. She signed me in an adolescent unit, so I couldn't sign myself out. And I went into a psych ward. And they realized in that psych ward that it wasn't really psych, that I was completely needed to detox. So they brought me to the detox. And from the detox, they sent me to treatment. And like a good alcoholic, I stayed 28 days in a 14-day program. And I'm an exceller. I'm good. And, I'm 18 years old. I'm still a senior in high school. I want to get sober. My mother's sober 19 years at this point. I know Alcoholics Anonymous works. My stepfather's sober. My mother's sober. I know other sober members of my family. Excuse me. I know AA is where Derek Moffat belongs. And I walk into a meeting when I get out, and I hear, "Hey, kid, just keep coming. Just keep coming, kid." And I show up the next meeting, and it's "Meeting makers make it." And I show up to the next meeting, and it's a 90 and 90. Do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I show up to the next meeting, and they're like, "Just don't drink. No matter what, just don't drink." And then I walk into another meeting, and they say, "I spilt more than you drank." It sucks to be you. You wasted a lot of booze. Guys, these were a bunch of well-meaning people who had no idea what to do with an 18-year-old alcoholic suffering from the same spiritual malady that they were suffering from. And 4.5 months sober, the incomprehensible demoralization was still there, still kicking my ass as the day I got rolled into McLean Hospital. My life had not improved one bit. You give me alcohol and you're miserable. You take me away from alcohol and I'm miserable. Like, my life had no quality whatsoever. All I was dry. I still had all the pain, still had all the shame, the guilt, the remorse. All it had nothing to do with knowing what an amends was. Not a single thing to know that this was a spiritual-based program. And I went back out. Because the pain was so great and there was no solution for me to hear. And I went back out for 2.5 months. And if I thought it got bad by March 28th, 2003, by October 17th, 2003, we had a whole new bag of tricks that we were dealing with. And I walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and August 22nd, 2003, I moved to Burlington, Vermont, because I knew that it was the people, places, and things. God. You learned some pretty sick shit in this program. And so I moved away. And on October 18, 2003, I got my separation from alcohol one more time. God allowed me to walk into a meeting of men and women holding the big book. And immediately, I felt comfort. Immediately, I knew that these people had something to offer me. I didn't know what it was, and I definitely didn't know the work I was about to get into. But I knew just from their demeanors, just from the way that they carried themselves, there was something different about these people in Alcoholics Anonymous that was different than what I had experienced before. So I had this brief moment of serenity, followed by a gentleman grabbing me by the hand, throwing me in a chair and saying, "Sit down, shut up, you know nothing, and I'm your new sponsor." "Yes, sir." "Okay." At this point, I am willing to do anything it takes because I know that alcohol is not the answer any longer. I know I can't go on like this any further. And I am willing to absolutely go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So I start this process. And he says, "Is you powerless over alcohol?" "Yeah." Absolutely. Is your life unmanageable? And I start talking about all the outside stuff. And he goes, you missed the boat on this one. He starts talking about that internal unmanageability. That feeling of uselessness, of self-pity, of that incomprehensible demoralization. All that stuff that I felt inside of becoming someone that I never dreamed of becoming ever in my life, that drugs and alcohol made me become. I understood what he was talking about. See, everything in my life was always based on the outside stuff. And what I learned in this program is that it's all about the inside stuff. And what freedom. What freedom. So continuing to work through this process, I get to experience spiritual experiences. I go through two, and I go through three. And I had a problem with two and three, because I was pissed at God. He had done all this stuff to me. And my sponsor goes, well, at least you believe in him, so let's launch out on a course of vigorous action. I was like, hey, wait, back up a second here. I'm pissed. And he goes, good, let's write about it. All right. So next I launched on a course of vigorous action. And in that fourth step, something happened with that sponsor. And I asked his sponsor to be my sponsor. Now, I need to go back for 1 second. Because 36 hours sober, this man didn't tell me, just keep coming. Meeting makers make it. One day at a time. He didn't tell me any of that stuff. He said, meet me tomorrow morning for a business meeting for the New England Conference for Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous bid committee, and you're going to get involved. I didn't know the first thing about step one, and I was already a part of service. He knew my life depended upon having a purpose in sobriety. He knew that my life depended upon getting connected with God, working these steps and helping another drunk. He asked me to follow him down a path that was God-inspired, spiritually based, and involved helping others. And I did exactly that. So I went down this path, which was long, tedious, painful, free, indescribably wonderful. You know, I cried, I smiled, I laughed. I had every emotion to share. And when I finished the steps, it took about 6 months, 6.5 months, because of what happened. I don't recommend 6-7 months going through the steps. We're talking a month, month and a half, maybe, tops. You know, and I went out and he said, Derek, now that you've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, it's time to carry this message. Not your message, this message. The one precisely laid out in clear-cut directions from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't share your opinion, you'll kill someone. Share fact. And that's what I do. And thank God for that. Thank God I had good teachers in my life. Thank God they cared more about me than my sensitive little feelings to pull me with a vision of how absolutely incredible my life could be if I only followed a few simple rules. And through doing that, my life has got so phenomenal. Beyond my wildest dreams, I've had experiences that shall not be missed. You know, when I take someone through the book today, it's because I'm indebted to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not because I have to. I get to. I get the privilege of showing up every single day for my family. I get the privilege of showing up as an employee. I get the privilege of being of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. Last night, I had my district meeting. And you know, guys, I'm not liked in my area. I'll tell you. I'll tell you flat out. There's a group of us, and there's a pocket of us, that we're all in the trenches together. But the outside AA doesn't like us. Because God forbid they look at themselves and take a look at what's in this book. Because it's too comfortable to sit in a meeting and piss and moan about their chicken shit day. Sorry. Sorry. I went there. Said I wasn't going to. It's comfortable. It's not about comfort today. It's about doing what I have to do and what I get to do. Like I said, all this stuff is experiences that push me further and further and further into where I would love to become and where I would love to be someday. But if I keep saying no, or I keep in selfishness and self-centeredness saying, well, maybe I'll do that later, that's not for me, maybe I'll do that later, I miss these tremendous experiences. I show up when God asks me to show up. And last night, I was just elected the DCM for my district. I couldn't even imagine staying sober for 5 minutes when I first got sober. Never mind having people rely on me to teach and to tell them and show them exactly how to have a spiritual experience. It baffles me today. I was in a meeting and I heard some guy say, he goes, you know what? When a newcomer comes into the meeting, I don't know what to tell them. I was like, oh, I was speechless. I know exactly what to tell a newcomer. I've been there. I've done that. I know exactly how you're feeling. This is where we need to go. Invite God in. Allow God to work through me. Because when I'm blocked with self, I can't hear God. And when I can't hear God, I can't help you. My life, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, says that my life depends upon working with others. Well, if I'm clouded with self and I'm not talking and listening to God, how can I help others? If I'm not helping others, I'm sure to die. So, unity comes in is that the group needs the individual and the individual needs the group. You know, unity is what keeps us all together. And guys, the fellowship is phenomenal. I love the fellowship. I have friendships and I have relationships with people all over this country, all over the country. I can travel probably 30 states out of this entire country and have somewhere to sleep, somewhere to go to a meeting. I have connections everywhere because of the fellowship. But don't think for one second that the fellowship is what keeps me sober. The fellowship is where I meet the newcomer to pass along the message where it was so freely given to me so that I can help them, so that they can help someone else. The steps give me freedom, God gives me strength, and the program gives me newcomers. Or old timers. I'm telling you, I sponsor more people with 2, 3, 4 years of sobriety than I do anyone else. It's the people with 3 years of sobriety who come up to me and they're like, sobriety's got to offer something more than this. It's got to have something more to offer. You seem happy. Why? And I show them. And then they get taken to a place beyond their wildest dreams, and they can pass it on to someone else. But if I wasn't clear of self, if I didn't do the work, if I didn't take my inventory, if I didn't make the amends, if I didn't practice 10, which is my daily spot checks, 11, the morning meditation, nightly inventory, and 12, helping a newcomer or a sick and suffering alcoholic, and practicing these principles in all my affairs, meaning not going home and kicking the dogs, meaning not going home and screaming at my mother, screaming at the girlfriend, screaming at family members, being a selfish, self-centered, arrogant SOB, meaning being able to be there for people and happily, usefully whole. It's amazing. I get to practice these principles in all my affairs. And in doing so, I have these experiences that are indescribably wonderful. You know, Chris was up in Boston last week. It was the last weekend or the weekend before. And he challenged us from the podium. And he said, if you really want to know where your sobriety is at, ask 10 people to write everything they hate about you. No. Okay? No one did it. I can guarantee you no one did it. Except for three of us in that room. We got together, and we're still writing. And you know what? It's so cool. It's so cool. I have new experiences every single day because I'm open, because I listen, and I make myself available where God wants me to be available. You know, I was talking to Chris today. He was so... He was kind enough to take me around this beautiful place in which you guys live. You know, I'm coming over the Tappan Zee Bridge, and there's New York City on one side, and then there's mountains, and I mean, it's picturesque. And you guys live in a phenomenal place. And don't take it for granted. Don't take it for granted. It is truly tremendous here. But you know, what we were talking about is what any length looks like. Now, I'm at fault for this. And I think we do the newcomer a real disservice when they come in the rooms. Because we tell them, hey, get a sponsor. Get a home group. Read the big book. Blah, blah, blah. And we go on with all this stuff. Because we've had the experience ourselves. My first sponsor was my best friend's mother, who's a non-alcoholic. Because no one took the time to describe what a sponsor was to me. I didn't know what a home group was. I didn't know that you actually put your name on the piece of paper and held yourself accountable to that group, got involved in that group, went on commitments with that group to detoxes and facilities to carry the message to that still sick alcoholic. I didn't know that's what you did. I just thought a home group was someplace you went. And I heard, get the big book. I'm searching Alcoholics Anonymous for a book that says big book. Can't find it. It doesn't say big book, it says Alcoholics Anonymous. It's blue and it's got a yellow heading. See, these are things that I assume the newcomer knows. And it kills them. So I want to make sure, if you are a newcomer tonight, that you know what a big book is. It's a blue book, it has a yellow heading on it, and it says Alcoholics Anonymous. I will get you one here tonight. This meeting is phenomenal. I saw a stack of them in the kitchen with a bunch of CDs. You go into a meeting up where I'm from, and you're like, hey, you got a big book? Oh, yeah, they got those at Central Service. Okay. Looks like we're not getting a big book tonight, and no one's getting a message. You know, I want to make sure that that newcomer knows exactly what a sponsor is. A sponsor is not a financial banker. It's not someone to give you housing, or they may in the beginning, our book says, for a brief time period. It's a sponsor is simply one who guides the sick and suffering alcoholic through a spiritual experience, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, holds them accountable to those spiritual principles, and invites them to help others. Pulls them with a vision that holds depth and weight that they can find a newfound freedom in their own lives. He says, we've been given a new life. It doesn't say I got my crummy old one back and I needed to piece it together. I got a new life. I've been given this unmerited gift, and all I have to do is show up and give back the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. So what I was talking about was any length. Any length today looks like driving 4.5 hours to Burnsville, New Jersey, to speak. If you told me when I was new that this is what I was doing, this is what I would be doing at 5 years sober, I would have told you, you're nuts, you're insane, and I will absolutely never do that. Today, it's the bright spot of my life. A 4.5 hour drive, in a heartbeat. Chris asked me on a Sunday morning to come down the following Tuesday. Answer was yes, absolutely. Not a problem. My honor. Not out of ego, not out of pride, not out of any of that, but out of a humbling spot to be privileged to be able to carry a message that's clear cut and out of the book. So, steps 5 and 6, which is why what I was asked to speak on. it struggled for me to talk about six for more than any period of length of 2 minutes. Because all it is a sentence, it's a paragraph in the big book. And it says, are you willing to have God remove all these defects of character? If you've done a fearless and thorough fourth step and fifth step, you know exactly what your character defects are. And for me at least, I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to get well. You know, like, God remove these from me. So, but the fifth step was the single most freeing step I have ever taken in Alcoholics Anonymous. For once in my life, I allowed another human being in to the deepest, darkest crannies of Derek Moffat. I told him about all the stuff I hated about every single one of you. And then he turned it around on my selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and where I was frightened, which I was pissed at, but that's another story. I got to be able to get right with God and with myself. And being able to get right with me, being able to get right with God, I was able to get right with another human being. And in getting right with another human being, there were no more secrets. There were no more things to hide from. I was okay with self. I was okay sitting in a room with Derek Moffat, knowing exactly who I was, who I had become through addiction, through my alcoholism, and who I was to become through a spiritually based process. You can call my mother today. I am absolutely not perfect. I don't do this perfectly. That's why we have 10, 11, and 12. I was talking to Chris before the meeting, and I also say I do a yearly inventory. I do a yearly fourth step because I'm not perfect, and I screw up, and I miss things on my 10th step, and I miss things on my 11th step because I'm clouded with self. I get in moments of confusion, and I don't know the difference between the true and the false. So once a year, I take a good hard look at that year of what was to be, what happened, and if I still have anything that needs to be cleared. I just did one. It's amazing. I'm free. I get to be free every single morning when I wake up. I have a new purpose in life. I have a new happiness in life. I have a new freedom in life that is absolutely indescribably wonderful and beyond my wildest dreams. I never had a purpose in life. I never had any sort of feeling of contentment in my life, except in the beginning with alcohol, which relieved that and made me whole. And I get to experience that on a daily basis. Even in the worst moments of the day, I'm free. Sunday night, I got a call from my ex-girlfriend, who I'm trying to work things out with, that something horrific had happened. And she went, no one had heard from her, seen her, or talked to her from Friday night at 8:35, which was the last time I talked to her, until Sunday at 5:30 p.m. when she called me. I got to be there for someone I love. I got to be there for someone I care about. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if it wasn't for these steps. I wouldn't be able to do that if it wasn't from being cleared of selfish motives. Because my selfish motives is, ooh, she's vulnerable, she's weak, move in. I don't have to do that today. I get to treat women with respect, with dignity, with honor. I get to treat men with respect, dignity, and honor. And most of all, I get to treat myself that way. So in telling another human being, telling God, and admitting to myself all this stuff, it wasn't about dumping it. It was about becoming okay and right with it. And I got to get right with everything that happened in my past. I get to get right and get comfortable over a period of time, of course, with who I had become and who I wanted to become. So in step six, there was no question of whether I wanted God to remove these defects of character. I knew that those were the things that blocked me from the sunlight of the Spirit that our book beautifully talks about. I'm going to flip to page 45, and you most of you all know what page 45 says. It says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how are we to find that power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. It doesn't say, which will offer you temporary relief. It says, this will solve your problem, this power greater than myself. And I got to get connected with this power. And sorry, I can't go into 6 without going into 7. I said yes. It was a question. My sponsor made things real simple for me because I'm a complicated alcoholic. He said, Derek, are you ready? Yes. Good. Get on your knees and let's pray. And we went straight into this prayer. God, remove everything, good and bad. Remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Congratulations, you're now at step 8 and 9. Yeah, like, how simple can this be? How simple can this be? Like, here's a question, pray. Here's a list, take action. While you're taking action, continue to make the list and take more action. Oh, and by the way, go help others. Like, Bill and Bob and the first 100 alcoholics could not have made this any more easier. But through selfishness and self-centeredness, through thinking my ego, through pride and ego and all that other stuff, I think I know what's best for every single one of you sitting in this room. Oh, you want to talk about relationships? I don't know what the hell to do in mine, but I'll sure as hell tell you what to do in yours. Right? No. Definitely not. My sponsees call me up and say, Derek, you know, I'm struggling with this or this girl. I don't know what to tell you. Go talk to God. He knows. I can guarantee you God knows exactly what every single one of us is supposed to be doing at this moment, at this time, in this breath, here, now, in the presence. But I'm too blocked with self, and I'm not going to hear what God's having to tell me. That's why I get free. I sit quiet. Every single morning, meditation is the absolute essence of my program today. I can get so full of self all day long. I've made meditation a very, very important part of my sobriety. And if meditation is stagnant for you, change it. If prayer is boring, change it. I can't believe I'm going to say this. It's like sex. If it's boring and stagnant, change it. Make it exciting. Make it fun. Make it yours. It doesn't have to be the person sitting next to you. It doesn't have to be their meditative life. This is your connection with God. This is your experience. And when I get quiet with God, God screams exactly where I need to be. It's in those quiet moments that I get lifted and brought to places that I would never, ever, ever imagine me being. I'm a drunk from Hanson, Mass. How come a therapist who has a PhD can't pull a drunk from the gates of hell? How come the doctor who has a PhD and has MD next to their name can't pull a drunk from the gates of hell? How come God, it says this, how come God reserved this right for the alcoholics? I know exactly how to pull a drunk from the gates of hell. I've been there. It's an amazing experience that shall not be missed. If you're new, welcome. If you're just coming back, cut the shit. No, seriously. This isn't about inconvenience, and I tell this to my sponsees all the time when they balk at doing the work. If your alcoholism was an inconvenience to you, you're probably not one of us. If it was life and death, welcome. We found a way out upon which we can absolutely agree and join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great book. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. thank you for allowing me to come down here and share my experience, strength, and hope with you. I hope I maintain a relationship with every one of you. You hold a special place in my heart. I know what kind of group this is. I know you're all in the trenches. And there's not enough of you guys out there. There really isn't. We need to pull them with a vision of how unbelievably incredible their lives can be. And stay on the firing lines. You guys are my heroes. Thanks.